You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we welcome Stuart Yeomans, the Chief Executive of the investment advisory firm Farringdon Group. Now, Stuart, welcome to the show. You are coming to us today not as investment advisors of a traditionally expat-based asset management advisory firm, but in your capacity, I think, in terms of your forging new business in the Sharia-compliant robo-advisory platform space. Now, if you can, just start with your initial roots in investment advisory and the $170 million in AUM that you manage. Primarily for investors from an expatriate orientation. How is that business going and why aren't you not pursuing that avenue right now?
Okay, first and foremost, thanks for having us on, Chuang. It's good to be here. So with the expat side, we've been pretty successful building a client bank over the last 9 years. We've obviously got the office here in Kuala Lumpur. We've got obviously one in Labuan as well. We also hold the capital markets and service license in Singapore. So this setup's allowed us pretty successfully to build up a good client bank in the expat side. We're not leaving that business model. It's successful. It's profitable. We're now looking to sort of branch out into other areas. And what we identified, we did a business plan, a 10-year business plan 4 years ago, and we're 4 years into that. It took us an extra year to get the Singapore license. It's actually pretty difficult to get the CMS license there, but we successfully achieved that this year. We're now looking at the moment to change our license here in Malaysia, and that's to obviously go into the fintech side of things. Essentially, what we're aiming to do is build a Sharia-compliant robo. And we want to look at really the retail side of things, so doing a lot smaller investments. So the expat side that we're currently dealing with, I'd say the average client is about £200,000, so roughly, give or take the exchange rate, around about £1 million. Biggest clients on account have got over $4 million on account. So, I mean, there's a wide range. But we've also got clients with, say, $10,000 on account as well. So what we're effectively trying to do now is to branch out into a different realm. And over our 9 years as a company here, we think we can do that pretty successfully into the Sharia-compliant robo market.
Well, I guess unsurprisingly, because a lot of your expat customers are exactly like yourselves, British people. But if you want to go into the Islamic side and the Sharia side, you would want them to be dealing, by human nature, they would want to be dealing with one of their own. So I guess with a robo-advisor, this obviates that personal Asia to British barrier that naturally exists. But you won't be the first on the market. You're going to be behind Wahed Investors, I think, who have this American firm that have come out before you guys. I think you spoke to them recently. Before we talk about the competition, Stuart, do you get the impression that perhaps this is all quite conceptualized, quite conceptual, quite gimmicky in a way, this whole robo-advisor thing? Is this here for the long term, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is here for the long term. I certainly agree with the gimmicky aspect, just for the fact that, even with your own show, you have a lot of interviews on fintech at the moment because it's the buzzword in our market. And the regulators really want to get into this fintech market and making sure that companies set up. And I see some glaring problems with some of the competitors out there with regards to them not initially being investment advisors. You've got a lot of IT companies who are pretty good at setting up front-end and user panels who are now miraculously financial advisors. So there's got to be some worry there on the quality of advice and the ethical side as well. With regards to the jurisdiction where these guys are setting up, I think there's been some big problems with people setting up in certain jurisdictions as opposed to others. And I think when these guys proceed to get the business set up and continue with their business model, they'll find that there's some huge barriers to bringing on board clients. You need to watch compliance. You need to watch what clients you can specifically deal with. You even need to watch the types of investments that you can go for. And I see a lot of IT companies that are jumping on board with this because it's the buzzword. The other side of it is banks. Banks are certainly looking to expand into the fintech side, but are they really going to cannibalize their current business model? So where you've got high charges, front and back end charges on funds, mutual funds, typically in Malaysia, a broker will charge you sort of 3-5% on the way in. It's expensive. Now, is a bank going to set up a fintech arm and reduce its fees by probably 80% and go after that business. It's non-profitable for a bank.
Well, your competition is not necessarily the banks or the IT firms, the startups, as it were. Your competition might exist in the well-established local funds that might just be a hop, skip and a jump away from offering the same thing. So the moat isn't necessarily existent right now. In fact, it is very much a pie in the sky until it really becomes lucrative and profitable to do so, don't you think?
I agree and I disagree. I think obviously the local market have got some investment companies that are going to go into the robo market. It's going to be a lot to deal with the local funds here. Obviously, we are traditionally dealing with the expat market, so we're dealing with the international market worldwide. So where we're looking to build a portfolio, we're going to be doing it in a multitude of currencies, and we're going to offer not just returns on the actual investment, but also on obviously changing with Forex through the currencies as well for the client. So yeah, there are some local firms that are going to be competitors here in Malaysia and certainly through their licensing in Bank Negara, but we're looking to go region-wide with this. So there's a huge amount of Muslims in obviously in India, Indonesia, and many other different countries around the region that which we want to go and go after.
Well, Malaysia is the home of Islamic finance, if you look at it and believe in the Bank Negara narrative. And that's where you might come up against the large incumbent Sharia-compliant funds that already exist here, whether it's an Etika or whether it's a CIMB Wealth Advisor. Mm-hmm. And they would know the lay of the land much better than you, because obviously you've come from an environment where you've invested in non-Sharia assets, whereas they've come from an environment where they know Sharia assets, they know where the performance lies. So how are you going to address that, that kind of like deficit?
We've got clients that have been using Sharia investments through ourselves for the past 5 years. So, I mean, we have got a lay of the land on the type of Sharia investments that we're going into. With regards to the individuals that are part of our team, we've got Sharia scholars that are signing off on the investment. So it's not just a group of expats that are setting up these. We have employed the correct people to deal with this. We've currently shortlisted 4 guys that potentially are going to sit on the panel. We're going to take 2 of those on board to sign that off. Obviously, you've got places like the UK that have set up huge £200 million sukuks that have been used in the offshore market as well. So I do agree that Malaysia has got a bigger pedigree on there. But, I mean, we've been here 9 years as well, obviously dealing with a number of clients. We deal with the expat market, but also high net worth Malaysians. So we have been asked for these investments in the past. With regards to the funds that you've mentioned in Malaysia, do you know the sort of annual management charges of some of these funds?
I'm well aware, and they can be quite high.
Exactly right. So what we're looking to do, a number of years ago, we went through a price point discussion at the company saying that there's typically 3 fees, main fees that a client pays. There's normally around about 1% to the advisory firm. There'd be around about 1% to the platform that they're actually investing through. And there'd obviously be about a 1% to even 2% on the fund, and that's negating any upfront fees that these people are taking. So as a business, we looked at, right, the markets don't grow 10-15% like they used to in the 1980s, 1990s. So volatility in the markets and the limited return means that we need to reduce down the price point for clients. So what we're currently looking at is, with our asset management arm with a CMS license in Singapore, is to build an investment strategy which is Sharia compliant, and we will eventually launch a non-Sharia compliant version. Now, this is where I think the competitors that we're dealing with are going to be a bit worried about what we're doing.
Well, give us an idea what kind of cost structure you're going to be offering.
To really break it down for you, normally when you've got an agreement with a custodian, you're looking at about 0.15 to 0.2. If you're dealing with one of the big American custodians like Persia, that you're going to be looking at about 0.2 a year for the client. We're not looking to take an annual management charge for the advisor, because effectively there's not an advisor sitting in front of you. It's algorithms and it's a robo. So that 1% charge is negated. Now, with setting up the actual investment products, so we're basically index advisors to one of the big Swiss banks. And what we do is we set up a managed certificate that holds the direct sukuk and the direct stocks for the actual investment. Our fee on that is between 0.3 and 0.4. Okay, then you've got a small fee to the platform as well. And because we've already got a large AUM with these platforms, they've managed to reduce down their fees. So effectively, we're looking at a genuine total expense ratio of well below 1%, and we're actually aiming at 0.75. Now, I don't think there's a competitor in Malaysia can offer a TER of 0.75. A lot of our competitors have said, how is that possible? How can you do that? Well, the simple fact of the matter is that we have a company that's already successful. We've got 170 million US under management that's dealing with high net worth guys. We are effectively just opening a new department. That new department is obviously going to be dealing with the algorithms, everything on the one side. And the only real main staff we need to bring on board is the Sharia scholar and also the programmers. We've already got the programmers and we've shortlisted the Sharia scholars. So we're looking at a price point of well below 1%. And I honestly don't think there's a competitor out there that can touch us.
We are talking this morning to Stuart Yeomans, the chief executive of the investment advisory firm Farringdon, that also wants to venture into Islamic Sharia robo-advisory platforms. After this, Stuart, we're going to get deeper into your milestones, your performance targets, and your outlook for the next 5 or 10 years. This morning on The Breakfast Grill, we have Stuart Yeomans, the chief executive of the investment advisory firm Farringdon. Now, last we left it, Stuart, you talked about how, and you were extolling the virtues of your platform, and how, quite rightly, it is driving down the costs of investment management. Now, the thing is, you are going to be catering to a Sharia desirous market, and you won't be necessarily going for the high net worth expat crowd that you're traditionally used to. But where's the market going to come from? Because the people that you want to target with large AUMs might not want to deal with robo-advisors. They want to deal with a face-to-face person that has the human attributes that go along with, you know, dealing with large amounts of essentially retirement savings. So which part of the segment are you going to address?
I think initially robo-advisors are going to be going after the smaller amounts of money, I think.
And the smaller ticket sizes. So what kind of ticket sizes are you looking at?
We're trying to launch this as low as $250 as an initial investment. I'm currently
250,000?
No,
$250
US dollars as an initial investment. We're currently in talks with Le Bon FSA. We're going to be going into the third meeting with them, and they've been very helpful. We're looking at the moment, we obviously have a life broker's license that we potentially look to either upgrade to the fund management license or even go a step further and go with the investment banking license. So we've got one more meeting with the regulator before we decide on which way we go. Now, we believe that the fund management license will allow us to do everything we need. But then if we really want to go further with this, we're potentially looking to go into the investment banking realm as well. Now, we've even got local partners that are looking to potentially come on board. One of them who said we can mention their name is the Anta Group, who are potentially looking to assist us with sort of breaking into the market and assist with funding. We're a cash-rich company at the moment, but obviously if you're going to go the investment banking world, you need a lot more capital to move forward. And we've potentially got the opportunity there with that.
Well, before that license is procured, you're going to be essentially a B2C provider, which then means huge customer acquisition costs, no?
Absolutely not. I mean, when you're looking for the high net worth crowds, I would say that our B2C cost is around about $1,000 per client. So yes, that's quite high when you're looking at dealing with the high net worth crowd. When you're looking at a pure robo, obviously you're mainly focusing on the online marketing. The good thing for us, we already have a very good brand name.
Among British expats, potentially, but not all.
We've got a good brand name between the locals as well. We don't just deal with the British expats. It's predominantly our business, but we do have some individuals of local descent that are investing with us as well. Now, with regards to the online side, there's a number of other marketing areas where we can go into, and we can get the brand name out there. One of the main reasons I personally wanted to deal with the chief of operations of Anta is because Anta are a household name. And we see the massive opportunity of partnering with those guys. So we're not even necessarily saying that the robo is going to be launched, obviously, as Farringdon. The initial name of it's going to be Algebra. But there's potential that we're going to brand this up as another local partnership as well. So we're already looking into how we're going to get this out to the local market. It's going to happen before the end of Q1. In 2017. We have the funding to do this. The biggest decision for us at the moment is whether to go for the fund management license or the investment banking license. And this is why we've got a lot of chats to go ahead with Le Bon FSA before we go ahead with that.
Okay, so what kind of milestones and performance targets are you looking at? What kind of metrics are you aiming for within, say, a 1 to 3 year time frame?
I think initially in the first year, you're going to be around about 3 to 6 months before you really see any foot flow in. I think a lot of it's going to be down to the investments that we actually choose and the actual performance that these products actually give to the client. We certainly look into get only around about 500 to 1,000 clients in the first year. I hear competitors saying they're going to bring in 40 million and they're break even and they're going to do that within 6 months. I disagree. We've grown organically as a company, and it takes a long time to bring in AUM. The beauty for us is the fact that we already have a successful business which pays the bills. So we're not a new startup that have to try and worry about how many new clients we're bringing in. Obviously, it's the main focus of this whole project that we're doing. But I think aiming between the 500 to 1,000 initial clients, and then we're going to offer very, very similar to your already technology companies, the way Uber offer free rides and stuff like that. We've got a few ideas in the pipeline that will help people effectively spread the word to their friends. And I think the main thing is performance on the actual investments.
So before we can talk about performance, what about what kind of AUMs, assets under management, are you targeting?
In the first year, between 5 and 10 million US is what our goal is, which I think is pretty reasonable in the grand scheme of things. Then moving forward, you would obviously be hoping to hit the 10 to 15 mil the year after.
And obviously that will be contingent upon what kind of performance milestones you achieve. So where are the returns to be had now? Everyone's talking about a low return environment.
Yep. It's funny, when I listen to economists and even people on your own show, some people say that the buy and hold strategy is dead. Some people say that the trading strategy is dead. And there's always a conflict there of what works. Now, we're not just going into buying typical direct funds. Obviously, we have the CMS license in Singapore, so we effectively can build our own investment strategies. Now, we're partnered with a number of the large Swiss banks that are allowing us to effectively build managed certificates. These certificates allow us to hold the Sukuk and the stocks directly. One of the examples of this, we've got one called the Master Select strategy. It uses a algorithm from one of the big banks, and it's called Replica Strategy. And it's a really interesting idea of, it looks at the 5-star rated Morningstar fund managers. So any of the listeners that don't know Morningstar, they're a company set up in 1984 who effectively rate the fund management market.
So what kind of returns can people expect, cut long story short?
Well, it's effectively outperformed the FTSE on the GBP one by 30% over the last 5 years. So, I mean, you're looking at the index plus 30% on there. But this one actually pulls off the best stocks that the fund managers of the 5-star rated funds feel are going to do the best. So it's basically stripping out the top funds, the top stocks that the top fund managers choose, and we spread that across 10 funds. So it's stripping out the 5 best stocks of all the funds.
So what's to stop a copycat entity from just using the same platform?
We've already had that happen. I'm not going to mention the name of the bank, but we actually showed the strategy to one of the banks in Singapore, and they copied our strategy within around about a month.
Okay,
you can't stop that. I mean, it's part of the market. We're not looking. I mean, you can't really put intellectual property rights on an investment strategy. Anyone can copy it. It sort of speaks volumes to the fact that one of the biggest banks in the world copied our strategy, and we're a small fish in a big pond.
We're talking to Stuart Eumanns, the chief executive of Farringdon, the investment advisory firm that has got designs on expanding into a Sharia compliant robo advisory platforms. Now, going on to the compliance aspects of what you're going to do, Stuart, where do you stand on the Bank Negara application process in the regulatory sandbox regime now?
We're not going into the Bank Negara regulatory sandbox. We're in Labuan. So effectively what we're doing is we'll be the first applicant through their sandbox approach.
Where and how does it differ?
It differs because they don't actually have it set up yet. So these guys are actually going to be taking some obviously lead off Bank Negara, and we're also assisting them in saying this is what we would like to see in the sandbox, and they're being very open in the discussion. So effectively what we're doing is we've compliance. I mean, I have a level 6 and a level 3 compliance officer, one in the UK and one here in Malaysia. So compliance, we're okay. With regards to our risk rating system for, say, anti-money laundering and source of wealth, we have actually used one of the systems that one of the FTSE 100 companies in the UK use. So effectively, it's a point rating system. So depending on where, as a simple example, if you're sending money from the UK, it's going to have a lower point than if you're sending money from, say, Syria. obviously, when it goes through the different point risking system, you will then see, right, does this have to go through extra due diligence or does it not? Or can it
correct.
Be open
so if you're
away?
Going if you're going the lab one route, obviously that might amount to some kind of a loophole between before going to the Bengal route. Obviously, that's quite pertinent from a KYC or AMLA perspective.
Why would it cause a loophole? The Bank Negara and Labuan FSA, obviously Labuan FSA are a subsidiary of Bank Negara and they use the same anti-money laundering and source of wealth. So it's exactly the same as far as a compliance procedure goes. I mean, these guys are effectively under Bank Negara and they've got to make sure that they're not encroaching on Bank Negara's business. Labuan was originally set up to deal with the offshore market around Asia. I was at a dinner last month and Mohammed Ibrahim, the governor, he specifically said he wants to see Labuan not offering just to cheaper insurance and cheaper investment products to the local market. The whole reason for Labuan is to launch it out to the region, and that's exactly what we're looking to do.
Interesting. So what's to prevent fintech applicants now going the Labuan route as opposed to going the Bank Negara route?
We welcome competition. I don't think that there's going to be one competitor that can do what we're doing for 0.75 a year to the client. And at the end of the day, the market and what I've seen, I've been out here for nearly a decade, the price point is key. You had someone on your show the other day who was saying that we're not greedy, we're only going to charge 1.5% as an annual management charge. Now, that's not the TER. They're charging 1.5% for the advisory. Then they're going to have to go and buy the investments because they don't hold their own investments. You're looking probably between, even if they do ETFs at 0.4 to 0.7, then some funds, you're probably looking at least another 1%. So their TER is probably 2.5%. And that's the issue I see with the market. People are trying to go into the robo-advice, but they're not reducing down the costs. And I think where we're going to be different is I have the CMS license in Singapore. I'm not going to double dip on commission. I'm not after an advisory fee and the asset management fee. I can do everything that we're doing now and we can do it for 0.4. That's the only income we're seeing off the client. Then you've got the custodian fee and obviously the dealing and trading. So you're looking at about 0.7 to 0.8. Well, so I think competitors, we welcome it in Labuan. See if you can get the charges lower than what we can.
Ultimately, I guess the drive to zero will be very much a phenomenon here, as it is in London where you've got ETFs, which are now free, I think, for
about 7 basis points. So pretty much
as much free.
Same as America. I mean, America, you've obviously got Vanguard and BlackRock, who are obviously correct. Heavily into the that's who creates your ETFs. And ETFs are fantastic. I mean, we use them for high net worth clients, and they are cheap. And I think the price is key. I mean, people, I still meet with guys now that are paying sort of 3-4%, and then they're still taking a 5% hidden fee on the fund. So clients are getting hit with anything above sort of 7-12% a year off the consultants.
Yeah, that's way too much. And of course, what you're doing is correct in terms of driving the cost of investment down. So we wish you the best of luck, Stuart, and hope that eventually the price of investing will come down quite a lot more than where it is now. So thank you for spending time with us and good luck with your model going forward.
Thank you very much.
We were talking to Stuart Newmans, the chief executive of the investment advisory firm Farringdon, which is also expanding into Islamic Sharia compliant robo-advisory platforms, BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.